been a while. Then we looked at our own resources, and then yesterday we talked about community partners and how to, you know, pursue those and set them up and so forth. And now we're on getting the resources for what we'd like to do. So here we go. So I said, begin with the big picture, narrow the focus to your neighborhood, and then you really want to describe the need or the problem. I think developing the case statement is from, I can't remember where I got that. It might be from this book. Describe, who are the people with a need or problem? You know, what is it? Where do these people live? And why does it occur? So who are the kids in your intervention study?
They are, I'm trying to think, they're elementary, middle, and high school.
Okay, so it's a range.
Mm-hmm. And we run an after-school program.
And they have a developmental? Mm-hmm. No.
So they don't have any, they're just kid. The whole purpose of the project that I do is that the kids try to find an issue in their community to work on. So that's where my problem is, trying to figure out how to frame some of these things, because I don't know what the issue is. The kids determine what the needs is.
It's kind of a leadership development in a way for the kids.
Yeah.
So they identify something and then they, okay.
Yeah. So okay. That it makes it hard for me when I'm trying to apply for funding.
Oh, you could measure that. You could do a baseline, and then after they maybe do the intervention, I bet there's something out there you could use to measure. So you do a baseline and then compare down the road. And I don't know precisely what that would be, but I bet there's something you could use with them. But you might have to go for an internal review board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would be doable.
Yeah.
Kids are more protected, but you could maybe do that and get some grant funding. So that's a great example. So she'll describe the population, you know, how they come about to this. You could start with something in general about kids not having whatever skill set you're wanting them to develop. And I betcha, see, this is right up my alley, that there's lots of stuff out there about you'd want to throw in things about protecting. There's factors in the social sciences about stuff that puts kids at risk, and also sort of protective variables. Mm-hmm. And so you could say, you know, by having them in this program, you're hoping to decrease whatever it is, that some of the outcomes you want to increase the leadership skills or whatever it is, and then decrease their, you know, sort of delinquent behaviors or whatever it is you want. That's not the term I would use, but something like that down the road. Because kids, you could find something at this age, are typically at risk, you know, when they're entering in the middle school or something like that. So you start to build the case. So you start with the global kids at this age, maybe at risk for da-da-da-da, in this neighborhood. There's got to be something you want to maybe prevent by doing this, or enhance, or maybe both. And then you come down to describe. So in this particular neighborhood in Santa Cruz, and what would be really cool is if you had some statistics about kids getting in trouble, or I don't know. This is just total brainstorming off the top of my head without knowing your population. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of how I would approach it. And then you're going to say, and this is the goals of our study, of our intervention, or whatever it is, of our program. Most of you are going to be looking at programs. So I know that sounds like, oh my gosh, how do I do that? But I kind of sketch it out in my mind in that way. So when I start to gather the evidence, and you know, I get the articles, I'm on the internet, I get the demographics, you know, some national stuff, and then I start to get in my brain this idea of how I'm going to filter it down. As I said, I start sort of wide, and then I come down and make it very relevant for the population that you are serving. And that, you know, that's, you know, because you want to say that it's important for this group of kids. You know, we know it's important. Yeah. Were you assisting? No, okay. You just always look so engaged. I love having Lee here because he's like so engaged. You're just like a professor's dream to have something like that at the front. So now we talked about obtaining data on, what day did we talk about that, Monday or Tuesday? And we, and I was, and at that time I was like, you know, just get some quick and dirty stuff so that you can make some decisions about what kind of programs you might want to implement. And the and frequently the agencies you're partnering with have great data on what they're doing. So if you're if you're at all partnering with somebody that you could ask about kids and demographics, ethnic background or whatever, you know, because at this point you're going to want to actually get more specific, and you're going to want to have, you know, and if anybody wants me to email you any of these PowerPoints, I'm happy to do that. So I in the interest of paper up here, I didn't print out bunches of stuff. But, and I didn't bring any cards, but if you go to the CLU website, you can find, you can track me down very easily too, so just email me. Anyway, so what's the incidence of the need or problem? And has it increased or decreased? So, you know, think about why you're doing this. Like homelessness, there's a lot of great data out there. So we know it's bad. And we know in this economic time, it's worse. So when I wrote the grant actually for that homeless project in Lake City, you know, I started nationally with some statistics, and I moved down to, you know, King County data, and then I said that I talked about Lake City and why the needs were a little bit unique and different, that we have these older guys, and, you know, some women, but mostly older guys, a lot of vets and so forth, that... we know veterans are very at risk for, you know, drug use and substance abuse and to be homeless. So anyway, so I tried to bring that to life and be very specific and credible. You want the funder to have faith in your numbers, that you've done your homework. So sometimes you might compare the incidents in other areas to show that you're worse. I mean, that's always a good thing. You don't want to compare if it's better, because you want to have this compelling need. For example, I had a student last year who was working with Seattle Indian Health Board, and she was writing a grant to get funding for education around colon cancer. And she ended up making this beautiful brochure, and we pulled in a student from the photography school, the arts, and I actually was... I'm in the brochure, my hands are in the brochure, for doing a cult blood test of stool. Now you talk about the most unsexy, you know, like who wants to do this? But this was a compelling need for the native population, because their incidence of colon cancer is like triple the rest of the... Yeah, it's a little, I didn't know this until she started delving into it. So she had this very compelling need. You know, the incidence nationally is this, but for this population, it's very high, because they, you know, those of us here who are over 50, you know, we get our colonoscopy, but you also, like, you go to the doctor and they send you home with a little test, and you know, put your poop on there a little and send it, mail it back in or whatever. Well, this is incredibly embarrassing. It's natives typically don't send it back. They don't do it. They don't. So she was trying to get this whole educational program together to raise awareness in this particular population, and you know, and it was a very compelling story. It was great. So something like that, where you can compare and contrast as to why your population really has this need, is really great. And it's got to be, you know, valid data, obviously. So even though I think for not-for-profits, they don't always maybe require references, I even for the programs and stuff that we do, I make the students put in references. I mean, I think it's a good idea at the end or whatever. So it's like I'm really quoting credible sources. And then, as I was saying before, you might have pilot data because you've done a small program and you know it works, or somebody else has a similar program. So in this city, it worked very well. I was talking with Connie Marty the other day about boy, she and other people put together this incredible program in Minneapolis. I'd never heard of this, where they, well, we have a healthcare one in the Tacoma Dome for homeless people, but it's all focused around health, and we get all these providers. Mm-hmm. But theirs is really helping people to get a job. So if they have all kinds of services. Like if they don't have a birth certificate, they have somebody there that can get it for them, so they don't have to go down and wait in line. They have
people giving haircuts.
All kinds of stuff. It wasn't just healthcare. It was really amazing trying to job coaching or whatever, and it was a full day in their stadium. I think they do it twice a year. And I was just very impressed. So you could say, you know, you've seen this program elsewhere in another city, and you want to, it doesn't have to be on such a massive scale, it could be a small program, and you would like to replicate that, but for your population, you're going to change a little bit, because you know your population, and I think that's key. You've got to know your population that you're serving, and so that you can make a case. So you're going to alter it a little bit based on, you know, Minneapolis. Well, I don't know what the big difference would be between Minneapolis and Seattle, but for something like that off the top of my head.
Climate.
Yeah. Like, they were appalled that we have these 10 cities where people live outside, you know, because that would never work in the winter in Minneapolis. So
Bellingham's done that.
Pardon me?
Bellingham's done that.
The 10th city?
Program. No, that program.
Oh, they have?
Yeah, two years in a row now.
Oh, and did you have like a wide array of services,
yeah,
not just healthcare?
Right.
Though?
Right.
People come. Huh.
And come and get clothing, you know, for job interviews, and get a phone number set, you know, where they, there's just all kinds of things that can make a huge difference in someone's life.
Yeah. Because just that effort of going down to town to get, hard. Okay. So you can see that I've got down here, create the backstory. You really have to, I think you have to know about 10 to 20 times more than you're going to put in the grant before you start writing it. I mean, because if you skim the internet, take note of this, guys, because I know this is what happens in high school. If you skim the internet and just puts a few facts here and there, it's going to be very apparent to the funder that, you know, you haven't put a lot of effort, that you really don't know. So I think you have to come into this knowing way more than you're actually going to use in the grant. And this is from Cheryl Clark, I think, from this book, where she says you need to create a story with unfolding events. And so you really want to invite the reader into your universe. She says you want the tension to sort of mount. So it's almost like a short story or something where you're, what a problem this is, and you know, it's this compelling story, and you want to be persuasive in your writing. I mean, we don't want to be we want to be professional in the writing and very clear. We don't want to use, I don't use a lot of adjectives that are, it's just super fantastic. when I go through, you know, I do a lot of editing of papers and then colleagues, we edit things back and forth, you know. So the best thing ever invented for me was the edit function in Word, you know, where I can cross everything out in blue or red, or I try not to use red because that's kind of. But so first create the backstory where you really know the details, and then what's really nice is to put a human face on the problem. And I'm not very good at this. I always encourage the students to do this. But I think it is, you don't have to put a human face and tell an anecdotal story, but I think it can be very helpful if it fits. So this is actually an example out of her book where, so someone was writing a grant for a Shakespeare proposal, urban Shakespeare for kids, so in the city, and it's called Urban Shakespeare. And so this kid who's 14 says, Urban Shakespeare introduced me to a whole new language I didn't even know existed. Now I love the theater, and I especially like doing the pretend sword fights and death scenes. That was cool. So this is obviously a proposal to bring arts to inner city kids or something, so they have a quote from there. But to have a compelling quote from someone who's homeless or that needs housing, or a kid that maybe has gone through the program similar to this, can really be helpful, I think. I mean, this was one I didn't, I should have thought earlier to ask one of our guys, you know, in Lake City, but I pulled this off the internet. I had to recover from 2 surgeries in the street. I had already been to the shelter in Greensboro and used up my time, and I couldn't go to the shelter in High Point because my doctor is in Greensboro. So this is another part of the country, obviously, but I pulled this because I'm working on developing a respite program for homeless guys in Lake City, where they can recover after they get discharged from the hospital, because it's a huge issue. Is it a huge issue in Bellingham, or an issue at all?
Well, I work at the food bank there, so like
you work for
stuff like for the food bank.
Oh, uh huh.
And we support the county, and I mean, I hear stories like that all the time.
Answer yeah.
The phone once in a while, and anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I hear stories like that too.
And I'm trying to think of who was telling me that. Oh, it was someone from the your church was telling me up in Edmonds they come and need help getting their prescriptions filled and so forth after they get discharged from the hospital and they you know they have nowhere to go and so forth. So actually, and I think these are okay, but I mean something even more, you know, as dramatic and as tear jerking as you can make it, without it sounding phony. But real stories are, like, I couldn't make something up. I had to find something. You know, you want real stories, obviously. So I was going to have us do a little exercise, but since we kind of fiddled around, I might come back to it, because I have a feeling I'm going to run out of time. I was going to have us practice doing, you know, getting little anecdotal stories that might be compelling. Hi, come on in, but I'll come back to that maybe. Because I always think that role-playing and practicing is very helpful when you're learning. So now this sounds like it's sort of a no-brainer when you describe your program, but it really has to relate back to the program and the need. And how does it address the need? And you would be amazed, maybe not, how quite often people have described the need and this compelling problem, but then the program that they're proposing doesn't quite relate back to, you know, there's not that direct link, or maybe, you know, it's a little bit indirect. So, and I even come right out and say, you know, why I'm proposing this, you know, why I think it's gonna meet the need, whatever the need is. So you wanna be really clear on that. You want this all to sort of flow seamlessly from the, you know, the first big description of the problem down to the neighborhood, to the goals, to the description of the program. It's got to make sense. And so sometimes I have the aims in my office or whatever. I have them up there in front of me as I'm writing. Okay, this is where I'm going. This is the end result I want to see. And I keep going back to the purpose of why I'm doing this. Because I get off on these tracks very easily. I start looking through research papers or various things, and the next thing you know, I've designed something that isn't quite meet what I started out to do. So it's easy to do. So keep reminding yourself, and when you get to the end, you know, have obviously you want to have people read it and give you comments. Clearly state the goals and objectives, and then citing similar approaches that we talked about is very helpful. When you get to you just talk about the program, you know, describe to what you're going to do, whatever it is. It's like the classes after school or something. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a. So you're going to meet maybe. Do you meet all year long?
Mm-hmm. Once a week, all year.
All year long. So you describe that. You might talk about the content and what it's designed to do, mm-hmm. and so forth. And then I use timelines. The more clearly you can lay this out, that your plan makes sense to you and you've thought it through, the more confidence the funder is going to have in you. And you also want to talk about who will be involved in the implementation. And the number of people you expect to benefit. So in your implementation plan, you'll talk about, you know, we expect to have so many kids, you know, per week attend the class. We expect that we'll, you know, lose a few, gain a few perhaps, but overall the average might be this many, you know, over the year. This is the number of kids we're going to have from beginning to end. Now, if you were going to, if you're going to have a measurement, you'll have, this is going to be a little bit different. You might have a measurement section where you describe the baseline and how you're going to do that, what tool you'll use to do that, which wouldn't be too hard. Timelines, you know, these are from SmartArt in Word. I don't know if you guys have ever used that. I mean, there's lots of different ways you can do it. It's just up on the, if you have two Windows, or not Windows, but if you have Office 2007 or 2010, they've got these SmartArt, and you can do all kinds of fancy diagrams.
I haven't tried that.
Well, I can never find the diagram that actually fits exactly what I want to do, rarely. So I tend to go back to my favorite Gantt chart, which I showed yesterday, because this makes so much sense to me. And where I just, I just made up this stuff along the side, like for a generic kind of program. And so, and this also, when you lay out your implementation plan and you break up the task for whatever it is you're going to do, this will drive your budget. And I think it really makes it easy for me, particularly if you have phases. So what I tend to do is also write the budget for the phase or for the piece of the program. I might break it down. So I'll have, like, I just pretended I was going to conduct some focus groups, and then I was going to do stakeholder interviews, and then I was going to analyze that data, and then I was going to develop a curriculum for something, whatever it was. And then I've got recruitment of the people that were going to benefit from this, and training. And then I'm piloting it. Now I can't remember exactly what I was thinking on there. And then I'm making revisions. And then actually I'm, so you might build in that you're going to pilot something a little bit within this. And then you're going to revise it. And then you're going to implement it. And then start evaluating. So just an example. So depending upon what you're doing. So for the homeless deal, you may have already done a lot of the upfront work that you wouldn't put in here, and you would state that in the grant in terms of, or you might have some of that built in, that you're going to do some community meetings. You know, that might be a part of it.
Yeah, because I think we'll probably, you know, going after grants, we'd probably be going after grants for specific phases, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know,
yeah.
So one thing was mentioned is a zoning change for our property may be up to $40,000. And that's $40,000 that the church doesn't have.
Mm.
So one idea might be going after a grant that would change to help us fund the zoning change.
Yeah.
That's just an idea. Like you point out, it was in an entire Gantt chart like this. They said, well, we're not asking, this is the piece that we're, because we've identified what we need to do.
Right.
And one of the pieces is this, so.
Yeah. And, you know, funders love to see, what's that for?
Yeah.
Okay. But I have another few minutes, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Did I try that more? Okay.
Yeah.
Funders really like, actually, most, that you are not just relying on them, that one. They really like to see that you're looking at other, this is what we're asking from you, we're looking to other areas to fund the rest of it. So that's actually usually a positive thing.
Or that you have your own funds in it, too.
Right, yes. So when I write a budget, if I'm, you know, we're putting in money, like at the university, we're going to supply secretarial support, or, you know, it's those in-kind donations. And I put a number on those, that this is our commitment you know, office space, so I put, I map out the square feet, maybe, you know, that we're gonna donate this, supplies, and then like 10% of this person's time. So for faculty, typically, we get grants, I don't get more money, I just get my time bought out or something, so, or I donate, they release me in order to work on that. So if that makes sense. So they wanna, so that's a good point. And then the funder's like, oh yeah, they're committed to this, they're giving this, and then they're not depending on just us. Because especially private funders, 40,000 is a good amount. I mean, I think we got a grant from the Better Way Foundation last year for the Yes Sir project, and it was 68,000, which they're under that Opus umbrella. I don't know if you've ever heard of that big Catholic, so for us, good match. For Seattle University.
Yeah.
But anyway, so some you don't get the real multi-million dollar grants normally from private funders. Sometimes Bill Gates Foundation. Bill Gates will not, they will not fund faith community grants, as far as I know.
But they fund things like Bread for the World.
Yeah, but they will, but what's interesting is they're talking as a university, even though we're a Catholic university, they are talking with us about some youth initiative programs, interestingly. But but in terms of churches, I don't think they will.
I think you're right.
But you could partner with somebody who does the grant for you, to, that's another option too. So, finding the right funding match, you know, matching that up is really important. And the funder, if you send in an application and they feel like you haven't really looked at their mission and what they fund, they're going to immediately say, well, they didn't really look at us. So doing your homework, what have they funded in the past? And usually on the website, they will say exactly what they'll fund and what they won't. Like most private funders will not fund scientific research, you know, so because we have NIH, you know, all these scientists, and other science foundations and so forth.
So I'll jump in on this one.
Yeah.
You said something earlier that collecting things before you came in. Bonnie said that the King County 10-year plan has grants available.
They did. They sent out a call last year.
So the reason I kicked on this, the right funding match, because Holy Cross was, like the 10th faith organization that signed up to be a faith organization signing up to 10-year plan.
Ah,
so
that's
when
a good
we,
thing.
So when we go to the 10-year plan, we say we were one of the churches that signed up as that. So.
You know, and send me an email, because I think in my archived emails I have that call for proposal email with the website on it, and so I can send it to you.
Do you remember how long ago you received it?
Well, I know it was 2010. Because we were talking with the Seattle Mennonite Church, and we looked at it at the time, and we just weren't quite ready to apply. So I remember looking, and I'm pretty sure I saved it in that file in my email.
And
I'm thinking, I don't know if it was a one-time deal, but if I'm guessing, you know, since this is such a emphasis for King County, that there's got to be something. And on that, and I was going to get to websites, but the other, I don't know about the Obama stimulus money. You know, that was a really good area too, but having
ARRA funding, ARRA. Recovery Act funding?
Yeah, I mean,
well,
they had.
It's been taken back by Congress now.
Yeah,
some of it was spent and some of it has just been removed from being able to be spent.
Yeah. It's a tough time, I tell you. But Patty Murray's website, believe it or not, our senator, and I imagine in other states too, in Minnesota, has a really great. Website. I mean, as on her website, there's all kinds of links, and I actually printed out. If you guys want to, I only have about 7 copies from her. What fund grant funders are looking for, written by one of her aides. So, and then behind that, I've got the an example of a grant application that's a common application. It's kind of like the college common application. There's a common application for Northwest philanthropic organizations. So it's really nice if you can get to know, so if you find a potential match, do your homework. If you can, even a cold call to them and say, this is what I'm thinking. Do you think, develop a relationship with that funding agency. I wouldn't, for a private funder, I would not do a cold grant. I would see if you can find somebody who knows someone on the board.
So you've got somebody to send it to that knows it's...
Well, just to kind of feel them out.
Kind of expecting it.
They're expecting it.
So it doesn't end up in a...
Develop that relationship. Yeah, develop that relationship. It's really important. For one thing, if they fund you, and things go well, they're bound to look at you favorably in the future as well. It's not uncommon for private funders to fund somebody again. So I've got to write a big report for the Better Way Foundation. I asked for an extension. It was supposed to be due next week. And our development office is really, you know, putting the pressure on me to write a really good report because we want to go back to them for more money, you know, and I think it will, you know, we've more than lived up to what we said we'd do in the grant. But hopefully it's going to be a long-term relationship with you is what I'm saying. So, and think about how will this project help the foundation further their work? So what's their mission statement? Because that's really what they're looking for. At the end of the, when they have their board meeting at the end of the year, they want to feel that their money was well spent. And that, you know, this is what we, by giving out this money, look at the outcomes this organization did. Because they'll discuss that at their end of the year board meeting. Or it'll be like, we're never giving this place money again. Hopefully it won't, but I'm sure that happens once in a while. And sometimes for reasons beyond the agency's control. You know, things kind of fall apart or whatever and didn't go as planned. It was more expensive and stuff. So, and be sure and look at the application process. So, in general, just after reading your proposal, and this sounds so easy and it's not, but you want the board to think, to have a sense that that you really believe in the work so that passion and persuasiveness comes through. That it's going to make a difference. You know, they want to know why should they fund your project over someone else's. So if you can somehow, you know, that marketing tool of differentiating your product a little bit, why are you different from the next agency? You know, why you? Confidence in your numbers. And as I said, confidence that when the year-end reports come around, they're going to be like, well, this is money well spent. Because that board is stewards of that foundation money. So they're really wanting to look at where they send it out. Why they're funded. You know, they're clear and very well written. So if you're not a good writer, but you can sketch out what, you know, the ideas. And someone else is, as I said, write in teams, get somebody, are you a good writer? Oh yeah, what am I saying? You wrote a book.
Well,
there's your writer. There's your writer.
It's a technical writer.
And technical writing, that's what I do, and I think that's a good person.
Sometimes it's hard to get him to finish writing.
So someone else will go through and chop it. Karen will chop you.
He's always tweaking it himself.
Okay. I do that too. I have to write and then I have to leave it and then I have to come back. Yeah. I'm not a quick, I don't churn stuff out quickly. I take quite a while to do things. And the amount, the foundation has supported maybe similar projects. So looking at what have they supported in the past, you know, because you don't want this to be so different that they're like, well, this isn't really the kind of work that we fund. It doesn't have to be identical, but in the same family. So if they, like Better Way Foundation has a real focus on children, early childhood development, which frankly is not my thing. But somehow I was, again, in the midst of writing this up, that's the multidisciplinary team I'm over. So on our team, we've got a guy from the School of Education that is an early education specialist, you know, because we, you know, to be sure we had that covered, because that's what they're interested in, and that was the focus and the goals of our grant, was to develop programs for this Head Start kids. That the amount requested was acceptable. Look at what they've, you know, they'll say on there, we'll fund up to da-da-da-da. And then if you can see what kind of amounts they've given out in the past, that gives you an idea. And I back into the budget quite often. I mean, I don't start adding it from the bottom. I say, okay, that's the number I'm going for, the maximum, you know. And then how can I make it work within that number sometimes, you know. And then, as I said, it's nice that the funder is somehow connected to your agency in philosophy or people or something. So, and why are they not funded? Very sadly, the project's not adequately documented, so they really are not sure what you're doing. It doesn't seem, it's not significant to the funder. Maybe it's very significant to you, but they're thinking, well, I don't really think this is going to make a difference. I don't, you know, so for you, I think that's going to be really critical. I mean, I think it'll be easy for Lee and Karen to sell the homeless deal, that it's going to make a big difference to get people in housing. So you'll have to have something tangible that you can measure, and maybe a similar program elsewhere that showed results.
I always get, when I get rejected, they always say, it looks like a very interesting project. We're not sure how anything's going to be measured, because it's just so, it just, like I said, unfolds as the project goes through. So I have to really figure out how to do that evaluation.
It's the kids, it's their growth somehow,
mm-hmm.
right?
I haven't spun it that way before, because I've just been focused on this, they're doing the research, and I don't know what they're going to come up with.
Oh my gosh, they must be really growing in many ways,
think? I think I need to look at it more.
Especially if
way,
you could compare them to another group. A control.
That's hard to get, but yeah.
That is hard. That's hard. So now I'm turning it into this major research project.
So would you like an anecdotal story about that? We were talking to a lady who was the head of the YWCA project, and she was talking about a housing project in which they had come in and they were putting bark in portions of the project, you know, making, you know, kind of dressing up or looking nice. And some children from another area came over and said, we want to have bark in our area too. And they reported, say, well, in that particular area, there's still trash around and weeds and so forth, and that particular area hasn't taken the initiative to clean that area up, and we're waiting for that. So the kids went back, because they wanted the pride of their property, they went and got the initiative on the part of the adults to get it cleaned up. So the anecdotal type of thing is the motivation of children to change society. If you'd like to have her name was
Sherry
Kilty. If you'd like to have that as an anecdotal for that type of thing happening.
Well, I think,
you know, because we're talking about personal stories. And
there's lots of stuff out there, you know, in the area of sociology, lots of questionnaires and so forth that I think.
Yeah.
She could use.
Uh-huh.
She's honing down on which one
to
do, like a baseline, and then, you know, to see what that change is, and then to see if it's. I love doing that kind of stuff. And then to see if it's. That's the fun part. Was it statistically significant?
Yeah. I love that.
And that's, you can tell I'm a quantitative researcher, so even though I. Okay. And then sometimes the agency might think that it's. They look at it and they think, this is just too large. What they're proposing for the money is just unrealistic, because these people are smart. The people that are reviewing the grant are smart, and they're going to be like, oh, there's no way they can do this. So if you have that feeling, they're definitely going to see that. And that might be when you say, you break it off, and you say, this is our overarching aim or goal is to do this. This is where it's going, and we're asking for money for this piece, like you were saying. But you want to make it clear where you're going with it.
Yeah, because they want you to be successful as well.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
They do at the end of the year.
They want some to see that return on their investment. Absolutely. And yeah, and actually these are some, this is already on that one page handout, and I mentioned philanthropynorthwest.org has some good stuff on it, and in the back of that handout there's that common application to give you an idea what a lot of funders are looking for program grants. So some of them are very, very specific. Tell us this, you know, what's the need, how are you going to address it? So identifying that need that we talked about on Monday is very important for not-for-profit program proposals. There is a foundation directory, and I believe, I'm not sure if the downtown Seattle Library has this, but you could check with your library, but I know it's in Redmond. And so people who are in the development world, like, and belong to that professional organization, which I don't ask me what it's called, I forget, and they get together and they have their meetings and so forth, a lot of them belong to this, or their age, like we belong, and so they have it in their office at Seattle University. But you can get on there for free at some libraries, and I know Redmond's one of them, and there's and probably others. It's not at every library. And so they can even go on there, and you can query by area, you know, children's programs or homeless. In Minnesota, you probably have a similar deal. And actually, we have a state senator here. Mm-hmm. I bet
John,
you he, John and Marty, yeah. But I mean, Pettinger is a
U.S. senator.
U.S. senator. But he might know, you know, be a good person to ask about state grants for things, you know, specific to Minnesota. So any it is kind of an overwhelming project, but breaking it down, you know, it's doable. It's definitely doable, I think. And I actually, you know, I think it's a lot of fun. Once you do a couple, right, because you, you know, you, it sounds like you've written a couple. Even though you got rejected, you got good feedback though,
yeah,
too.
Mm-hmm.
That helped you realize perhaps what, how you need to,
yeah,
revise it a bit.
Have you had a good success rate?
I, well, yes and no. You know, I have to say, my one of my professional goals is to get an NIH grant. You know, and I know, and there, and because monies are scarce, the acceptance rate has really. I mean, it used to be about 15% when I. 6-7 years ago, and now I think it's down to 7% or 6-7% of applications.
Wow.
So I have not achieved that, and so I would very much like to. We'll see if I'm able to. Those are very, very tough. It's much more fun for me to write a program grant for a not-for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be quite so, you know, stringent. I mean,
right.
I mean, you can't be sloppy, but you know, doing a science grant is a little bit harder,
mm-hmm,
but also kind of fun. Yeah.
Mm.
Are you all just overwhelmed now, and you're like, "Oh my gosh, I can never." Just tell your story. Tell your compelling story. You'll do fine. Are you looking for grants for the food bank?
We're always applying for grants. Our executive director does that, and he's pretty good at it. So,
oh, that's neat.
I just thought I'd pile on and, you know,
yeah,
get a better understanding of the process.
Yeah.
I manage the reporting.
So, oh, so you have to report back,
yeah,
to the funders about,
yeah,
what happens?
Yeah. Do a lot of that. So
I know. Well, and that's brings up a really good. Something I haven't talked about is, as you implement your project, keeping meeting notes and things, because you know, then when you get that quarterly or annual report, you're like, okay, this is where we are. I know there's a reason why we didn't follow the plan that we put in the grant, and this is so typical, but why did we change this? So. Meeting minutes, I really rely on, and I usually take them myself on my little laptop, and I take copious detailed minutes, because then you go back and you say, okay, there was some good rationale. We tried this, it didn't work, And so we revised our protocol or whatever it is or how, and of course if you really veer from the budget, you need to let the funder know, you know, and so that happened with ours, you know, so I asked permission. I said, I really liked it. This is what happened. And so with the Better Way Foundation, can we revise this? And they said, sure. I mean, I think quite often they say they're fine with that, but you really need to keep them informed. But I really recommend meeting minutes. And what happens is, if you have people come and go, you may drift from the plan. Mm-hmm. So here you are. If you're measuring things, and that program starts to drift a bit, you have to kind of watch that. And maybe there's a good reason that you revise how you do it. But if you're trying to do a baseline and then a measurement at the end of the year, you don't want that too much drift, mm-hmm. or it's gonna, you know, skew things a bit, and it'll be hard to explain. So especially if you have, I don't know if you have people, this is what's happened to me in past projects, where you have people coming and going, mm-hmm. that help, mm-hmm. like at Holden. So they go, oh, I think this makes more sense to do it this way, not realizing they can affect, yeah. something you're trying to measure. Mm-hmm. So that's my other little piece of advice for writing those reports after you all get your money.
Do you see happen quite frequently that programs have a particular goal or vision, and then the funder comes back and says, well, we'd really like to see you go this way, and so then the program ends up sort of changing to match what the funder wants, and sometimes, you know, maybe drifting a bit from their actual mission so that they can get the money to keep their program going? I've seen that with a couple of programs, and it really concerns me. But in this economic time right now, really difficult, funding, it's, I can understand how it happens.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, like the Better Way Foundation, we actually wrote the grant to meet their call for proposals. So, you know, I wasn't, you know, I can't say, it was a match. It was a good match for us, but so we wrote it to kind of meet their needs. But I haven't been on that side where the funder said, we want you to tweak this. So I guess you just have to ask yourself, is it still a good match for our mission? Am I willing to compromise for the money? I think probably most people say, sure, why not?
Unless it works people too hard. I mean, that's what I've seen.
Yeah, but are you able to do it for the amount of money? Or because you don't want to set yourself up for failure. Yeah, because that's a very good point.
You know, some director doesn't realize how much it's then asking of some underlings,
right.
in a different place that end up putting in long, long hours to meet the goals that weren't originally the goals.
That's kind of how I'm feeling about this Better Way project, in that we really are doing more, way more than they, in terms of the money that they gave us. But, you know, the faculty are all salaried, so we're just doing all this work. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is killing me. So I'm kind of looking forward to the end of that project, I have to say. And of course, but the development office is extremely happy that we've all done all this work, and we're like, okay, now let's go for the next phase, where I said to them, if we're really going to do a big, you know, intervention with these kids, you know, we're looking at least, you know, 1.5 million, I think, to do a long-range study. And they go, well, there's no way we're going to get that. And I said, well, I'm not doing it, because I'm not doing another, just, you know, project where I'm killing myself. And for us, it's release time from teaching. And also money to hire grad students, do, you know, all these things, hire a statistician, you know, not do it all ourselves. So, so yeah, I think you got to be careful. It's like, oh, it's so great to get this grant, but is it going to kill us?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Oh, Professor.